It's The Takeaway. I'm Nancy Solomon from WNYC News, in for Tanzina Vega. Last year, all around the country, people took to the streets in an unprecedented uprising for racial justice. After the police killing of George Floyd, the Black Lives Matter movement reignited in all 50 states. And we also saw brutal crackdowns by the police on protesters. In just the first few days of demonstrations, police around the U.S. arrested more than 10,000 protesters, many for violating curfews and failing to disperse.
We have a group of people blocking traffic on Albany and D Street. They're refusing to let the arm go eastbound, so we're stuck here.
Run them over.
Shut the f***. Don't put that over yet.
And this year, the police killings have continued, and so have the protests. That's a Columbus, Ohio protest against the police shooting of 16-year-old Micaiah Bryant last week. But as demonstrations continue in the U.S., some lawmakers around the country are looking at stricter legal penalties for protesting. Oklahoma and Iowa recently passed laws that grant immunity to people who strike protesters with their cars. And in Florida last week, Governor Ron DeSantis signed legislation to create harsher penalties for existing public disorder laws.
We're not having riots in the state of Florida. And so we put our foot down, we protected our folks. If a local government tries to defund the police, we at the state can stop that. We're able to put people in jail if they riot or assault a police officer. And in fact, if you assault a police officer during a riot, you have a mandatory jail sentence of at least 6 months. I think it's probably the most comprehensive piece of law and order legislation I've seen.
He can't breathe! He can't breathe! He can't breathe!
We're going to talk about this wave of anti-protest legislation with civil rights attorney Nora Benavides, the director of U.S. Free Expression Programs at PEN America. Nora, great to have you.
Hey, Nancy. Thanks for having me.
And I'm also joined by Ellie Page, senior legal advisor at the International Center for Not-for-Profit Law, and its U.S. Protest Law Tracker. Ellie, great to have you here as well.
Hi, Nancy. Great to be here.
So let's start with you, Ellie. I want to run through some of these recent laws one at a time. So let's start with the law in Oklahoma. What does that one do?
So the law in Oklahoma is one of many that we've seen, particularly in the last 8 months since last summer and the murder of George Floyd, that would essentially enable violence against protesters by limiting the consequences for drivers who injure or kill protesters with their car, allowing them to avoid both criminal or civil consequences in some cases. So we've seen at least 15 bills since last summer's protests that use that tactic. It essentially means that someone who recklessly drives over a protester can avoid any charges as long as they are acting unintentionally.
Wow. That's just mind-boggling to me. And Nora, tell us about the Florida law.
Sure. So, you know, Florida has really inspired many, in my count, 21 other proposals around the country. Governor Ron DeSantis introduced this very influential anti-protest policy in December. And when he did that, he announced that really this was aimed at professional agitators. Included in his proposal, he tried to put forward 11 different measures that would somehow punish protest-related activities. activity. At the time, that included making blocking traffic punishable by up to 5 years in prison, making destroying or toppling monuments during a protest punishable by up to 15 years in prison. It would provide immunity for drivers who hit demonstrators, which is a recurring provision that we are seeing. And then it would also open local governments to lawsuits if they were negligent in protecting people and property, essentially kind of creating the incentive to make sure that there is enough police presence during protests.
Isn't there also a local provision about any town that would reduce police funding? Is that part of this as well?
Yes, that's right. I mean, it's really kind of a 1-2 punch, finding as many ways to incentivize, quote unquote, enough police presence so that those that are protesting might otherwise think twice about actually protesting for fear of some very large police presence and a force that is not able to reduce its funding. I think that's really a clear response to the BLM and the Defund the Police movement.
Ellie, what's considered a riot under the Florida law, and who has the discretion to decide this?
It's a great question. So the law creates a sweeping new definition of riot that can capture folks who are protesting completely peacefully. If a group that they're part of is deemed essentially to pose a threat to property or people. So if you have a large group that police decide poses a threat of property damage, anyone in that group can face second degree felony charges, which means 15 years in prison, potentially. And likewise, if that group is blocking traffic during what is deemed a quote unquote riot, that's another second degree felony. It's a problem that we've seen. It's an issue that we've seen across the country in initiatives that would expand the legal definition of riot in ways that can capture purely peaceful, legitimate protest activity.
And to your knowledge, Nora, are there any laws related to the January 6th Capitol uprising, or is it mostly related to Black Lives Matter protests?
Well, that's such a great question because, you know, our state legislative sessions began in January. And so we saw dozens and dozens of new anti-protest policies introduced in the wake of January 6th. But I think that it would really be a false equivalency to say that those, the Capitol insurrection and then the Black Lives Matter and the George Floyd protests are one and the same. From my research, really, we only have seen one bill, and that is out of Connecticut, that would explicitly take on criminalizing certain activities like taking papers from a state legislature or from chambers. So really, that means that the playbook has been the same as it's been since 2017 for state legislators to introduce policies that really roll back our rights, whether it's, you know, creating greater penalties, as Ellie says, or creating new types of penalties, not just steeper ones. These are the types of policies that aren't necessarily in response to January 6th, but in response to progressive racial justice movements.
Is anyone raising the fact that many of these same states allow protesters to carry guns? I mean, isn't that a bit hypocritical?
Well, that's one of the main progressive talking points now. Many people have kind of tried to, you know, shine a light on that. And if you think back to our anti-lockdown protesters in Michigan who stormed their state capitol armed with guns, our former president, Donald Trump, said they were very fine people, all the while turning and looking at George Floyd protesters, Black Lives Matter protesters, calling them thugs. And so I think there's this very clear animus that is viewpoint specific, that if you have a certain message, you will more likely be seen as somehow criminal. And we're trying to undo that misconception.
Let's talk about the proposed bill in Minnesota. This is, of course, where George Floyd was killed and where many, many protests were held after that. Nora, tell us about the bill that's proposed in Minnesota.
Well, there are so many bills in Minnesota, and it's really been a hotspot state for many anti-protest policies, from the critical infrastructure types of proposals that would make someone, you know, near a critical infrastructure site also criminal, highway obstruction bills. Specifically, though, new pending legislation would increase costs for protesters, and it would make obstructing a highway or interfering with traffic vehicles new and enhanced penalties.
And so the Republicans who are proposing and in many cases passing these laws, what are they saying to justify this?
Well, as we've seen, you know, Governor DeSantis mentioned that many of these bills are supposed to enhance public safety, to really create a space where speech can thrive. Governor DeSantis said specifically that we needed to protect against these agitators bent on sowing disorder and causing mayhem in our cities. Other legislators have been quick to also say that we need to protect our citizens. We need to rally together to make sure that these riots aren't happening. But when we look at the numbers, when we look at what happened this past summer, our friends like ACLED, the Armed Conflict Centers, have explicitly said that 93% of the protests last summer were actually peaceful. So we're really kind of legislating and trying to correct a problem that doesn't exist.
And Ellie, where do you see what is the specific groups and the specific political ideologies that are being targeted here? I mean, what evidence do we have that this is really about Black Lives Matter and not other kinds of protests?
Yeah, thank you, Nancy. I think we've repeatedly seen lawmakers seek to silence specific protest movements instead of engaging with the concerns that have motivated people to turn out. And with this wave of bills, I mean, it's no exception. Lawmakers have made very clear that they're responding to last summer's protests against systemic racism. We know this from the statements by lawmakers themselves, which often conflate last summer's, as Nora points out, overwhelmingly peaceful protests with looting and violence. And then the text of the bills, the fact that they're targeting street protests, they're raising penalties for blocking traffic, they're making it easier for people to hit protesters with their cars, and targeting large and quote-unquote disorderly protests.
I still can't get over the hitting people with their cars. I mean, has there been pushback even? I mean, I would expect Republican voters to be a little wary of that one. Are we seeing any pushback coming from other than the progressive camp on that?
I mean, you would hope to see pushback from all sides of the political spectrum, because this is these are proposals that would threaten a right that's enjoyed by all Americans. This is not purely a right and a freedom that enjoyed by protesters on the left. So whether it's reopen protesters or anti-abortion protesters, I mean, they're exercising the same right under threat now.
It seems like a majority of these laws are trying to protect private property from vandalism. Is that an accurate assessment of what's going on?
I think these proposals are trying to do a lot, actually, whether it's protecting private property or making penalties so steep for someone that would be obstructing traffic, or even strip people of their public benefits and access to state benefits that they feel they can't really protest. Many of these contain so many disparate and far-reaching provisions. It isn't just about protecting property. It's about fundamentally making people feel like the risk of protesting is so great that they likely shouldn't do it.
Now, of course, there are laws on the books already for protecting property or, and arson, violence. Are there any places where there needs to be improvement, where things happen during protests that where we need tighter laws?
That's one of my favorite questions. And no, all of these states have existing misdemeanor laws on the books, which means if you do obstruct traffic, that is already a low-level misdemeanor in all of these states. the proposals that we're talking about today are really just juicing up the penalties for people for things that already exist as criminal penalties and often will just, you know, be further reason for people to think twice. So it's such a good question. And I think it really kind of begs the bigger question of why legislators are doing this.
Ellie, are people around the country challenging these laws? What's going on to fight back against them?
Yeah, so we know that where these laws have passed, I mean, already in Florida, where DeSantis signed their new law last week, already folks have brought constitutional challenges against the law. And we know that advocates are gearing up in other states where these laws are threatening to pass to do the same. But it's risky. You know, litigation is not a sure thing. And I think the number one priority and challenge right now is ensuring that these bills don't pass in the first place. I mean, we have an overwhelming wave of legislation. We've seen over 90 bills introduced in 35 states since last summer. It's an unprecedented wave, both in terms of the number of bills introduced, the extent to which they're moving through legislatures and passing, and the extreme lengths they go to restrict and chill protest rights.
Do you have a number of how many states? I mean, 90 bills spread across how many states?
35 states.
Wow, that's a lot. Yep. So, Nora, what are the First Amendment implications of these types of laws?
Well, you know, everyone often feels like protest is, you know, an activity for people who feel otherwise that their voices aren't heard. And I think it's important for us to take a step back and remember why we protest. You know, we often come together, we express ourselves when we feel like our cause is one that is not getting attention or recognition. And so it's important to see that our First Amendment rights, and specifically the freedom of assembly, is one that we really should be upholding, protecting, and viewing as sacred in this country, because it's so fundamental to the way that we conceive of how we engage with democracy. And yet, mostly these proposals would in some way make it harder to come out and demonstrate. Not all of these proposals, however, are, I would say, slam dunk unconstitutional proposals. They often are proposals where I'm worried about the way they will be applied. We do not know yet, given that only about 20% of the anti-protest bills proposed since 2017 have actually become law. We're still in a holding pattern. We're waiting to see how some of these bills will be applied by law enforcement. But Florida was so quick to pass this. The governor was so explicit in his saying that we are targeting the Black Lives Matter protests and George Floyd protests, that I think it's really an easy conclusion to see how these proposals, even if they are maybe able to pass constitutional muster, they will actually be applied in incredibly uneven ways, targeting specific speech and specific movements.
So when you say waiting, I assume that means that there is no challenge that's yet working its way through the courts.
There are active lawsuits now in Florida challenging the Florida law on its face to say that the way that this does a number of things violates our First Amendment rights. And I am very hopeful that that suit goes well because I think it's a really powerful one. But across the board, you know, because there are so few of these bills that have become law, we're still just very worried about how they'll be applied. And there are differences. You can try to challenge a law on its face the moment it becomes law, and then you can try to challenge something once it's been used. And that's where I get concerned, of course, about how law enforcement will pick and choose the kinds of speech that will be acceptable to them.
Well, and that was my next question, but I think you might have just answered it. So that's why this is seen as this could be disproportional, because it's going to be up to police to decide when and where they use these new laws. Is that why it becomes very disproportional?
Yeah, absolutely. So many vague provisions, you know, that someone could be, for example, guilty of unlawful assembly. Well, assembly is baked into our First Amendment. So unlawful assembly is really an oxymoron. And to imagine a situation where an officer says that's unlawful, but this over here is not, those vague terms give police incredible discretion.
Okay, I'm afraid we have to end it there. Nora Benavidez is a civil rights attorney and director of U.S. Free Expression Programs at PEN America. And Ellie Page is senior legal advisor at the International Center for Not-for-Profit Law and its U.S. Protest Law Tracker. Nora, Ellie, great to have you both.
Thanks so much, Nancy.
Thank you, Nancy.
NYC Now delivers breaking news, top headlines, and in-depth coverage from WNYC and Gothamist every morning, midday, and evening. By sponsoring our programming, you'll reach a community of passionate listeners in an uncluttered audio experience. Visit sponsorship.wnyc.org to learn more.